This coming, it's tomorrow actually, it starts tomorrow from the 8th until the 10th of November. Whiskey and Spirits Live is happening at the Sandton Convention Center. Last week we gave away great prizes, great hampers and tickets to a lucky few. But if you missed out, tickets are still available at Ticket Pros and they start at 240 Rand each. So we decided to bring in some of the masters representing Scotch whiskey and Irish whiskey. And on the one hand is a man who has a little bit of an advantage because he's been here before. Donald Colville.
Good to
Global
be back.
Global Ambassador for Diageo Malta and Reserves. Good to be back.
It's amazing to be back. I love coming back down.
Yes. So,
like I said, I feel like I've got a promotion. I've got to come in the room this time.
Yeah, because last time we had our tasting outside in the foyer. And then on the other end of the ring, because I do want a little bit of a challenge, you know, for the two of you to challenge each other on which is better, Michael Corman. The Prestige Whiskey Ambassador for Middleton Distillery.
Yeah.
And you're speaking on behalf of Irish whiskies.
I am indeed.
Great responsibility you have on your shoulders.
Yeah, but it's here, you know what I mean? I'm ready to go and I think we're going to give each other a good little battle here, like, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I'm very proud of my Irish whiskey, so fully going to represent, going to front up to Donald now today, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know whether this is possible, but Arch, I think his accent's getting stronger to make it more authentically Irish.
Well,
right,
it's supposed to make it more intimidating, Donald.
No, I do have to tune my ear to both of you. I have to tune it to the Scottish accent and I have to tune it to the Irish accent and back again. So our listeners also have to brace themselves. I love the stories of how you both ended up in whiskey. You, Michael, you're a former naval man, right?
I am indeed, yeah. I spent 5 years as a navigational officer in the Irish Navy. And I was actually away on a stint for 4 months on an oil tanker in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Christmas Day, whipped out a bottle of Jameson 12, knew very little about whiskey. Tasted it neat. I used to drink my whiskey with Coke, would you believe? You know, it's absolute, you know, that's your thing. But tasted it neat and from there never looked back. Joined the Whiskey Society at home in Cork, where the Middleton Distillery is. So I had access to, you know, phenomenal whiskies, phenomenal knowledge, phenomenal guys, and just decided to pack in the Navy. And, you know, here I am in South Africa. So, you know, things have turned out pretty good, like, you know.
Very good, in fact. But, you know, Donald, Scotland has an advantage because there's an immediate association. So for you, you grew up experiencing the culture of whiskey as a child.
I literally grew up in the whiskey industry. You cut me open, I bleed Scotch whiskey. probably not best if I get stopped. But I grew up with whiskey in my family. My great-grandfather used to own and operate distilleries. I grew up hearing stories. I'm like, and sadly, those distilleries are no longer with us. But it was, for me, it was just an inevitable. Mm-hmm. I was going to end up working in the industry, especially when I went to our archive that we have, Diageo, in Scotland. And I realised and found out very quickly that not only did my great-grandfather own and operate distilleries, and I knew all that, but he actually traded and was fairly good friends with Alexander Walker, so one of the Walker family. So my great-grandfather's whiskies actually went into the original Walker blends. So for me, that was just the moment of clarity that I needed to make sure I was in the right job. So.
Yeah, and I'm sure you offer it all the time. Like, did you know? I'm quite humble about it, actually.
I don't bring it up.
I'm sure it's nothing to do with your family that they're closed down now, Donald. Do you know what I mean?
That's a very valid point. So we'll give him 1 point for that one. That's a good head start already.
That was a cheap shot.
So, Michael, let's look at the revival in fortunes for Irish whiskey. The industry once faced near extinction, and it still doesn't have as many distilleries as they have in Scotland, for instance. But it's been quite ambitious.
Yeah, I mean, before 1900, Irish pot still whiskey was the biggest selling spirit in the entire world. So we're not coming from nowhere. I mean, there's hundreds of years of history there. It's things like the Prohibition in America, economic trade war with Britain, all these kind of things destroyed the Irish whiskey industry. And because Scotch had the ready market of the British Empire to sell to, just allowed them to flourish, and in a way that Irish whiskey couldn't really. So, I mean, it's only now when, you know, Jameson has had 28 years of straight growth. So it's on the back of that our premium offerings and our single pot still whiskies are now starting to really grow. And that's what I'm here to talk about. And that's why I'm in South Africa,
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a nice growth path. So you had the advantage of selling to the British. That's why you were able to run off like that. That's what he's suggesting.
I wouldn't so much say it's an advantage, more in the sense of in Scotland, we were absolutely decimated by Prohibition as well. That's what actually caused the distilleries in my hometown of Campbelltown to close. The minute the Prohibition was lifted in America, over 28 distilleries all closed over a case of a couple of months. But the thing about the Scotch whisky industry is the whisky is of such a high quality that it thrives throughout the world. So there was never really any danger of it having to close down distilleries because of something going wrong in America, because the rest of the world was still there and enjoying our whiskies. And so it was never really, it's not so much an advantage, it's just a quality over quantity.
Okay. There are variations in spelling. Why do they always feel that they, why do you spell it differently as the Scots?
Why do we spell it differently? I thought our question's more for...
Well, we're part of the rest.
I'll feel that one because, yeah, absolutely. So, if again, because we were the biggest spirit in the world before 1900, and because Dublin was particularly recognised as the home of pots of the whiskey and the best and highest quality whiskey in the entire world, they wanted to differentiate themselves from people who spell it without the E. So the Dublin distilleries in Ireland began to spell it with an E, just so they could differentiate themselves and prove that the high quality of their spirit, and so people knew exactly what they were getting.
Right.
See, the way I always jokingly say it is that the one way you can tell that the whiskey is absolutely so pure and perfect, that there's no additives in it, is because we drop DE numbers.
See, Donald has years of experience at this. He has all these stock lines ready to go.
No excuses, please. I saw a description that said that Scottish whiskey has a stronger aroma. And they say that it's thanks to peat smoked barley, and that Irish whiskey, that there is a smoothness to it. So do you agree with that? The differences in aroma and taste and flavours.
I am going to pay the Irish guys a compliment here, because Irish whiskey is an incredible spirit. It really, truly is. I'm like, joking aside, I know we're going to have a bit of a battle here, but I will throw out one nice compliment, and that The Irish whiskey is so gentle, so smooth, so lovely and light, and it is perfect. But they're also now experimenting a lot with using peat as well, and using other, and like there's so many other whiskies coming out. That's exactly why Scotland has flourished. So the reason why Scotch is the world's favourite whiskey is simply down to that diversity of flavour, that diversity of choice in terms of the light, delicate lowlands through to the fruity, balanced space side, to the earthy, fruity notes of the Highlands, to the incredibly rich and smoky and defined flavours of the West Coast. There's no other spirit in the world that has that same incredible variety of flavours. And I'd say at the minute the only other whiskey category that's coming, that's trying to get that into their world, is the Irish guys. They're really trying hard.
Mm-hmm. Do you have to have walked the land to be able to describe it just the way you did, the this of the east and the this of the north? It's like...
We're not a big country. It's not hard. It's like east and west. It's like only...
I've been on on a whiskey tour in Scotland.
Yep, we
stayed in a castle. We had these tastings and so on. But just that description, you know, it's incredibly rich and it's rooted in a landscape. You could see the landscape, what you were describing. In my mind, I could see the landscape.
For me, where the whiskey is made almost is a mirror image of the landscape. It's actually, the West Coast is rugged and big and powerful, like the whiskey. Speyside is... incredibly lush and green and fruitful, which is like the whisk, like the single malt made there. The lowlands are there's flat, there's not much hills, it's quite kind of very gentle as a landscape. So again, it's strange how the landscape almost reflects the whisky.
Right. And what is the impact then of the landscape on Irish whiskies, Michael?
On Irish whiskies, I suppose, because Midleton and where we're from has been the Irish whiskey industry since the 70s, you know, since well before that, since all the distilleries closed down. It is quite, you know, we have a taste profile that comes more from our barrel selection and our cask selection. So we have, you know, we source the finest casks from the various cooperages in Kentucky and the finest casks from the Sherry region in southern Spain, which has a lot of influence on our whiskies. And I think going forward, because of the rise of all the new distilleries in Ireland, you're going to see specific flavour profiles from around the different parts of the country. So like what Donald was talking about in Scotland, because they have geographical spread out of the distilleries onto the islands and things like that, you're going to get a little bit more of a flavour profile in terms of differentiation. But now, when you talk about the light spirit, you're talking basically about blended Irish whiskey. But what we have now is single pot still Irish whiskey, which is a totally unique flavour profile. And I think, you know, that's what's really our selling point now. That's our differentiating factor.
And
now,
what's with this rise of the single malts? There's been this keen interest since, like, what, 2015 or so?
Yeah.
And they remain quite popular, or the exciting aspect that people are talking about.
Yeah, so single pot still Irish whiskey is it's a combination of malted and unmalted barley. So in Scotland, they don't even define that as a category. They don't. The Scottish Whisky Association has five categories, doesn't include single pot still, which, you know, is obviously to their detriment. They're missing out. So I mean,
we'll get to that in a second.
So I found that, you know, anyone who actually tastes it here in South Africa, for example, you know, they it's the spiciness and the creaminess and the mouthfeel which the unmalted barley gives it that people really seem to enjoy, and, you know, is very different to a single malt.
You're rebuttal, Donald.
No, just simply, I'm again, you're absolutely spot on. You're right to point out that Scotch whisky is by far the most protected and most highly regarded of all whiskies in the world, because our rule book, our playbook that we have to work mm-hmm. to is about 2 inches thick. It's thicker than most all the other whisky categories combined together, because the Scottish Whisky Association aren't there to control us. They're there to protect us so that our whiskies can't be counterfeited and stolen and used in the wrong way around the world. Because you have to remember that we're sold in over 180 markets around the world. There's more Scotch whisky sold than American, Irish, Japanese whisky combined. So we've got to make sure and that's down, not just down to good marketing, because marketing only gets you so far, as mm-hmm. both Michael and I know, because that's the world we live in. The reality is, it's all down to quality.
Okay. I wish I had a whiskey to just like take that one. It came with an exclamation mark. I could feel your exclamation just to punctuate that point. So the distillation process, there are also differences between the two of you, between the two industries. So minimum of two, minimum of three?
I mean, myself and Donald were just discussing this outside. I mean, generally Irish whiskey is triple distilled and Scotch whiskey is double distilled. But in Donald's hometown, you know, there's a specific whiskey that is triple distilled, because obviously, you know, Donald's from an area where they have some knowledge, you know, and they do things properly, obviously, you know, and yeah. I can see him dying to get in here with a point.
No, not at all. So all I was going to say was, I'm like, you're right. There are a couple of distilleries in Scotland that do some triple distilled things, but we call that experimental. we've got a couple of distilleries in Scotland that are 2.5 distilled, 2.81 times distilled, because we've got incredible engineers and minds that can look at how whiskey's made and tinker things and try new things. But you're right. But in general, we normally get it right after two attempts.
I mean, Donald's gone from Donald's gone from portraying this, you know, from portraying weakness to a strength before. The protection of the Scotch whisky industry and the lack of innovation there was a great strength, but now he's portraying it as a weakness, you know. So, I mean, you can't sit on both sides of the fence, Donald, you know. You have to take these things.
I said it's experimental. I didn't say it was negative. It's a great thing.
Let's take it to aging now, because the aging process is also different. And is a good bottle of whisky dependent on the age?
Nope.
Not at all.
No, absolutely not. No, I think we can actually.
That's where you agree.
We can actually agree on this one.
There's common ground on this one, yeah. It's all about how poor quality is in the bottle. A whiskey at 3 years old can be equally as special as one at 40 years old. It's all down to how well it's been looked after, nurtured, developed. Mm. It's got nothing to do with the age of the bottle. The age in the bottle is all about rarity. So it means there's less of it. We've had to look after it for longer, which makes it more expensive. The fact it's 40 is almost irrelevant.
Oh.
Yeah, you can get amazing flavour profiles from really young whiskies. Just if you have a really quality master distiller, master blender, it's amazing what you can do with a variation in casks, a variation in spirit types, variation in years. I mean, yeah, it's really, really is tremendous, like what the work you can do.
So we are taking calls. If you've just joined us, my guests are Donald Colville, Global Ambassador for Diageo Malta and Reserves, as well as Michael Coleman, Prestige Whisky Ambassador for Middleton Distilleries. It's a clash of two whisky regions, Scottish whisky as well as Irish whisky. And we're taking your calls. If you have any questions, Michael will be delivering a masterclass. And if you've ever wondered what a single pot still whisky is, then that you can easily learn from him. There's been a resurgence of Irish whiskies in the global market. So he's here to represent that heritage. And of course, Donald, who's no stranger to the station, he was here previously when we had a tasting, and he'll also be there to engage with Diageo fans. So the picking up these aromas and flavors, sometimes I think... Okay, you must have had a different drink to what I've had. What does it take to be able to pick up the creaminess, the vanilla, the earthiness,
the ability,
the leather?
Simply for me, the ability to not being a grown-up. Because the reality is, people pick up a glass and they go, oh, they'll struggle because they're thinking, what is it? What is it? What is it? What, the reality, what you need to do is pick it up and go, what does it remind me of? So you need that imagination, that kind of same one that when you ran into the garden as a little girl and you saw a stick and you went, oh, that's a gun, it's a sword, it's a handlebar of a motorbike. Whereas an adult walks in and goes, why is there a stick in my garden?
Yeah.
You need that imagination that sees past what it physically is in front of you. And once you get to that, it's a different part of the brain, then whole world comes up. But there is no wrong answers. Unless somebody tells you it smells of unicorn hoofs. If somebody says that to you, you might want to just double check with them if they're okay. But the reality is there's no wrong answer.
There's no wrong answer.
No, absolutely not. And I'd always recommend, you know, before anyone tells you what it's meant to smell like, you know, get a taste it yourself. Because someone said to me one day, we were drinking scotch, you know, I do occasionally dabble, you know. But he said to me, that smells like, have you ever left a rubber boot in the back of a car on a warm day? And I picked it up and I went, that's all I can smell now, you know what I mean?
Oh, so it's just prescriptive.
Absolutely. The power of suggestion, and things can be really prescriptive sometimes. And so, yeah, absolutely. If you buy a new whiskey, don't even read the taste notes. Just, what does it smell like to you? Because, you know, it's all subjective.
Was that an insult hidden in a compliment? let's talk about Scotch whiskey as a rubber boot now.
Left in the
I didn't say it was bad, you know, it's just what it reminded me of.
Just throwing that implication out there.
Right. Please pop your headphones on. Well, we are taking calls. I'm seeing your comments as well. We'll be sharing those. I'm getting comments about the accents. One says that swooning, that accent of the Irish guy, swoon.
You can win the accent. That's fine.
I mean, I'll take that.
The stakes, you want to win it, right? And then another one says, may I see the faces of your guests? I'm loving the accents. Ooh, Fulu. And we'll get to the other questions, but Teppo's on the line. Hi, Teppo.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good. Welcome.
All right, thank you. And I'm very glad that you actually have the two rivals describing the different tastes in whiskey, because I especially like Glenfiddich. But then what I wanted to ask was, the Glenfiddich 12 and the 15 taste very distinctively different. So I wanted to find out, why is that? Because earlier on, they said that there's no difference in the age of the whiskey.
Yeah. So it's not one of my brands, and if my boss is listening, I might get shot for talking about it. But no, the simple answer is that it's, as Michael was brilliantly saying earlier on about his brands, it's all to do with the casks that are used in the development of it. So with the 12-year-old, my understanding is it's much more American oak influenced, while when it comes to the 15, they have a wonderful system of a Solera vat where they actually influence it with European oak casks and those sherry casks that Michael was referring to earlier on as well. So it's that difference of how they actually develop it and mature it. So it's not the age. That extra 3 years, yes, it'll make a bit of a difference. It's more of an influence with the wood, but the biggest influence is down to the style of casks they use to mature it.
Right. Teppo?
Oh,
there's
perfect.
Your
Thank
answer.
You.
Thank you very much. Right, so the casks are important. And what do the Scottish mostly use? What types
the majority of we use is American oak, bourbon casks. So that's one thing I should say. One of my bugbears in life is that people often refer to barrels, but a barrel is the size of a cask. The actual vessel itself is a cask. That's what we class it as. So you get different sizes, but a cask is the vessel. And a barrel is 190 litres coming from the American bourbon industry. Over in Scotland, what we do is we break them down and make them slightly bigger.
Yeah.
And they become what we call hogsheads. And then the European oak casks are what we call butts. And they're 500 litres in size. So just so people are using all the right terminology.
I was trying to file it correctly, actually. So barrels, American, we're talking about casks. And the Irish, would you prefer cherry?
Well, there's quite a lot of sherry influence on a lot of the pot still whiskies. Mm. So yeah, sherry butts, but then as well, yeah, American oak, ex bourbon casks. But we also use port pipes, Malaga. You know, we as I said, the casks are very important to us, so we like to vary it up, and it can give you really different flavor profiles.
So where else do the flavors come from?
So obviously, other than the actual spirit itself, which can, so depending on who you ask. So if you ask the master distiller, he's going to tell you that no, the cask maybe the cask is maybe 60, maybe 50%, maybe 40%. If you ask the master blender, master cooper, they're going to tell you it's probably a little bit more, and there's a lot more of the influence of the barrels that come there over the years into the whiskey.
William, you're out on an R21. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Very good. Welcome, William.
Thank you. Gentlemen, there's a letter and a number in the little square on most of the whiskey bottles. I believe that there's some sort of connotation and indication of and a purpose for those letters and numbers. Can you please explain?
I believe, are you talking about the B number on the back of the bottle?
Like a B28 for Johnny Walker and A27 for Jameson.
Yeah, so generally it just refers to whether it's imported or it's from, I believe, internally from South Africa, and just the batch numbers, as far as I'm aware. That's as far as I'm aware.
It's all to do with exactly that. That when we bottle it back in Scotland or in Ireland, we know where that bottle is destined for, and that is then marked on the back of the packaging. So it's simply a measure so we can see that it's in the right country. Because there are such issues as parallel importing with whiskey coming from other countries.
Yes. It's still gray the same whiskey. And whatnot.
Yeah, still the same whiskey. It's nothing wrong with it, but it's being brought in from a different country.
Bottled in a different country?
No, bottled. So we'll bottle it, ship it. It'll ship go it to another country.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody, because of taxation, it's cheaper to buy from there.
Yes.
They'll buy it and bring it into another country. So it kind of stepstone.
Yeah, so for example, in Ireland, in the north of Ireland, it's a lot cheaper to buy alcohol. So often people buy it in the north and bring it across the border. So it's just, just for price reasons.
Isn't there a debate about that happening at the moment? The taxes that are laid on the whiskey?
We get a lot of pressure on us from the countries because if they see whiskey coming in that's not actually being taxed in their country, then obviously it's to their detriment.
Mm.
But it's very hard to manage and watch because we can't see the borders. So it's an ongoing problem that we're always trying to
stay on top of. There's a question from Large_TheDJ. Says, is it true that whiskey is transparent and the color comes from the barrels, let's say casks in this case?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So when you take that spirit off the still at the end, at you know your 84% alcohol level, it's going to be a clear spirit, and it's, you know, it's essentially like what the Americans would call moonshine, what we'd call in Ireland as poteen. It's a new make spirit is what we call it. And it takes up those colours from the barrels over the years.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's 100% correct.
So are there any developing countries that are exciting you at the moment as far as what they're doing and what is happening regionally? I know India is proving to be quite an exciting territory at the moment.
I think what Ireland are doing with their whiskies is they're up and coming.
I compliment a bit, here we go again.
No, from my perspective, there is. India is brilliant. Latin America. It's fantastic, but for me, one of the biggest opportunities I'm seeing at the minute is actually in the African continent, whether it be in East Africa for me, through my colleagues in Kenya, Ethiopia, etc., to coming down here. Every year I come down, it just amazes me how the market's developed and grown and moved on, and the quality of the bars that are popping up, the restaurants, the serves, the level of service, all these things you keep on seeing year on year getting so high. So for me, not just saying that because I'm down here, I'm not being that rock star who says this is my favourite city of them all.
It's
not that. It's simply true that I love coming down here for that reason.
Fantastic.
I can actually testify to that because I'm the only one doing my particular job working on the single pot still range in the entire world, and they sent me to South Africa because they, you know, they're really excited about the market down here, and because it's such a big single malt market, and people are, you know, educated whiskey drinkers as well here. So as we'll see at the show tomorrow.
Absolutely. Yeah. So what can we expect?
So we're going to have a single pot still stand where we're going to be exhibiting all our single pot still range, Redbreast, Greenspot, Middleton, and our Powers range. And then additionally, people can purchase tickets for my masterclass, which is on Wednesday and Friday evenings. So I think there's still some tickets available. I see. Yeah, she's shaking her head at me there. Yeah. So 150 Rand online and 160 Rand on the door.
All right. So all those that are swooning over your accent, there's one way. And for you, Donald, what are we going to be up to?
Oh, I might be joining that masterclass. I can listen to that voice.
Yeah, he just needs to be educated on Irish whiskey. That's all it needs.
No, I'm going to be spending the next few days at the show just meeting people at the stand, anybody who wants to have a conversation about Scotch, any more questions people have, come and find me. You'll be able to tell me I'm the only Scottish guy that'll be on the stands, other than my colleague Ewan, who's here as well. But that and helping to promote and work with our special releases, yearly intake of bottlings that are incredibly rare, incredibly special, likes of the Port Ellen I've got with me just now, so a 50,000 rand bottle of whiskey.
Jeez. This is the one?
This one here.
My goodness. So you're going to be in a kilt on any of those days?
No. A kilt is one of my proudest things to wear. I love wearing my kilt, but not in this heat.
Not in this heat.
Yeah, it's far too much wool
fantastic
to wear in this heat.
Fantastic weather we're having. Well, gentlemen, all of the best.
Michael was desperate to tell you there that obviously the kilt is also Irish as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have our own patterns, but I just want to pick up on that point. Anyone who likes my accent, we actually have another Irishman on our stand as well. And we actually have two Scots as well. So anyone who likes the accent, just come along to our stand. No?
We'll take you out there. I'm looking at this Port Ellen, incredible. But do go along. It is the Spirit and the Whiskey and Spirits Live, I should say, at the Sandton Convention Centre from tomorrow until the 10th of November. Tickets are available and they start at 240, and tickets include entry to the venue, 16 whiskey tasting vouchers, a bottle of Consol bottled water and a tasting glass. And it's a wonderful occasion to meet people, to learn more about not only whiskey, there's gin and vodka as well being featured as part of this year's Whiskey and Spirits Live. That was Donald Colville, Global Ambassador for Diageo's Malts and Reserves, as well as Michael Coleman, Prestige Whiskey Ambassador for Middleton Distillery. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much for having us again.